Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with writers in the studios of North State Public Radio. Now here's your host, Nancy Wiegman.
Someday I should write a book about my life. Oroville native Marianne Ellick heard her mother say these words for years, and when Marianne retired, she wrote that book. She knew she couldn't write about her mother's life without including her father's rich Greek heritage, and she couldn't write their story without going back even further and including their parents. Marianne Ellick's memoir, The Liberty Club, covers family stories during World War I, the Great Depression, and World War II. In this first half hour, I'll ask her about her French mother and her French ancestry. Later, I'll ask her to tell us about her Greek father's family and life in historic Oroville, California. Marianne Ellick was born in Oroville, graduated from Oroville High School and Butte College. After working in Fresno and Reno, she moved to Chico in 1989 and got a contractor license specializing in concrete construction and ran Ellick's Construction in the Chico area in the 1990s. After back surgery, Marianne went into construction materials sales, and that took her to Sacramento. When she retired, she began researching her family history, and this obsession led to her writing a family memoir, The Liberty Club. She also applied for French citizenship. She now has dual citizenship, American and French. Marianne Ellick, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, what you did in researching this book is something that so many Americans are interested in now.
Oh, yeah.
I understand that second to gardening, studying, looking up your family ancestry is what people most, the hobby, number two hobby in the United States now.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so you've done something that a lot of people think, oh, gosh, someday I want to write our family history.
Yes.
And you thought about it for a long time before you did it. And what was in the back of your mind? Why was that seed planted to write your family history?
A lot of it comes from my mother, Monique. And she would always tell us growing up, I can't tell you how many times, she would say, someday I should write a book about my life. Because she had such a fascinating life. And, of course, she never did. But that definitely got the interest going within me, you know, to think, gosh, what was so going on in her life that was so interesting? And we heard tidbits here and there, but of course we didn't know the whole story.
Well, you know, something happened when my dad died and the local historical society said, would you write a history of your dad? And there were so many things, exactly what you said, there were little tidbits here and there. And then he had a scrapbook when he was younger. And when I went through the scrapbook, I saw, oh, now I know that person that he used to talk about. And now I see
yes.
how that person fits into the story.
Yes.
And I'm sure people listening have little odds and ends around the house, maybe photographs. I think, well, who was that? Well, I don't know. But one of these days I'll get around to figuring all this out.
Right. They're just faces. Who are they?
And one thing that impressed me in your book, you have so many family photographs going back so far. How did you have all these wonderful photographs?
Our family kept them. I was very fortunate. Seriously. A lot of the Greek photographs were my Aunt Bessie's, my father's oldest sister, and she had kept them. And this is amazing. When she passed, her stepson contacted my sister Michelle, and she was unable to get them at the time, but I was able to meet Jeff. And we met at an In-N-Out Burger, and he had this manila envelope filled with pictures. I could not believe it. And he says, well, this is your family. It's not mine, because, you know, he's not blood related.
Yeah.
And so I thought your family might want them. And it was like, oh, my God, it was a gold mine. We had no idea they even existed. So that's where many of them came from.
Mentioned that your mother was French and your father was of Greek background.
Yes.
And so this is the Greek side of the family that says, here, Marianne, we've got all these photographs.
Yes.
And they gave, because I was reading your book, but I found myself staring at those photographs for the longest time.
Yeah.
They were just wonderful. They were so evocative of the period, the time that these people lived.
Mm-hmm.
and their faces. And I just spent a lot of time just staring at these photographs. So thank you for those.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Something else you included are documents. You had actual documents.
Yes.
That were saved in the family.
Some saved, some I came across in my own research. And then on my mother's side, the reason she had, my grandmother had kept a lot of the family photos from the French side of the family, which, of course, my mother had also. And so we have a photo album at home that my sister still has, my younger sister. And so I scanned all these old photos, and that's how I came about the French side of the photos.
Well, I might mention that your mother was born in France.
Yes.
And your father was of Greek ancestry, but he was actually born in California.
In Oroville.
In Oroville, yes.
Yes.
So you then wouldn't be eligible for Greek citizenship, but you were eligible for French citizenship.
Yes.
So all these years go by, and in 2012, you decide, I'm going to apply for French citizenship.
Well, I realized I had so much information, and I contacted the San Francisco French Embassy. And I asked them, what do I need? You know, so they sent me the list of what I needed. And lo and behold, I had everything from my research. And I was like, okay, then. And I started the process. And it only took, I don't know, 2 or 3 months.
And even though you probably will never use that, but to me, it's a way of honoring your mother.
Yes. Yes, very much so. I wouldn't mind to use it. I wouldn't mind at all.
My guest is Marianne Alec, and she's written a book, The Liberty Club, and it is a family memoir. She recounts the history of her Greek father and her French mother. Her father was actually American, but their paths crossed. They met.
Right. But his parents were both Greek, so he is full Greek.
Right. His ancestry is Greek. He just happened to have been born here in Oroville.
Yes.
You were able to go back to your great-great-grandparents on your mother's side.
Correct.
And hear all these French names on your mother's side, and there were German names. Your great-great-grandparents had German surnames.
Yes.
And why was that?
They lived in the Alsace-Lorraine region, which borders on Germany. And at one time, that was part of Germany, and we're talking ages ago. And then the French had it. And then during World War I, the Germans got it back again. In World War II, the French got it back. So that region is very much German and French mixed, which is why even though there are French nationals living there, a lot of them do have the surnames, German surnames, mm-hmm. because of that.
For example, your great-great-grandmother was a Zimmerman.
Correct.
That was her maiden name.
Correct.
Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
And your father, your great-great-grandfather, Stoll, was his last name.
Yes.
And that was a wonderful photograph of him that I'd stared at. And on the collar is a number 140.
Yes.
So you mentioned in your book, too, that you were intrigued by what is that 140 on his uniform?
Yes.
And what did you find out?
Well, I searched and searched, and I could only surmise that it was the regiment number because I never actually was able to find what it was. But I did find out that this was the uniform worn by soldiers during the Franco-Prussian War. And my mother confirmed that, in fact, he had fought in that war. So I was like, yeah, I did a good job here.
Well, and it took you so long. This research, in your book, you say 3 years.
Yes.
It looked at least like 3 years to me.
Yes.
And I was interested in the fact that, for example, now that we have the internet, that was a big help.
Oh, huge.
And I wanted to just let people know how you went about, for example, showing your mother a house that she remembered. And what you say in your book is one afternoon while we're eating our fromage and crackers over storytelling, out of the blue, she recalled the address of her childhood home. I promptly wrote it down, found it on Google Maps that evening. It was the place. I printed the image and showed it to her. You're showing your mother this picture. As soon as my mother saw it, she says, that's it. That's the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then in that picture, you were able to see this detached two-car garage, which at one time had the family car, and also a Bugatti. And that's a story in itself. How your mother is looking at this house, her childhood home, a two-car garage with a Bugatti in it.
Yes.
Your great These
are my grandparents.
Your grandparents, your grandmother had a Bugatti.
Yes, she had a Bugatti. And it floored me. It absolutely floored me when I found this out. Because when my grandmother came to the United States, we never saw her drive. She never drove, not once. So, of course, we assumed she couldn't drive. Well, then we find out that not only could she drive, but she had this Bugatti that today would be worth, you know, millions. And so, yeah, we were flabbergasted, totally.
Well, now that brings up the story of how they happened to be wealthy enough to have such a car. Mm-hmm. And it also brings up the subject then to tell that story, we have to explain the arranged marriage.
Mm, yes.
And that's kind of heartbreaking, I found, when I was reading that.
Yeah.
Apparently he loved her, but she just didn't come around. So tell us that story. Now, okay, so we've got your grandparents who had the German surnames.
Correct.
And then they were related.
Yeah, they did. And then also my great-grandparents also had, they pronounced it Walker, but it was spelt Wacker.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
my
That was his name.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So my grandmother's maiden name was Walker, but it was spelled Wacker, mm-hmm. from the same region.
So it's also a German surname.
That's correct.
But then these great-great-grandparents had a daughter.
Yes.
And what were their aspirations for their daughter Louise Stoll?
For Louise, or for Simone, actually, my grandmother. Yeah, my grandmother Simone, they wanted her to marry up, I guess you could say, to marry into a well-to-do family so that, it's kind of a long story. Well, it's in the book. My grandfather became ill. I won't say why because it's in this story. So my grandmother was looking at someone who could take care of their family in the event he were to pass away. And so she was just being realistic about it. So she thought, okay, if my only daughter marries up, then he will be able to provide for us. And that's how she looked at it. And I can understand.
Very practical.
Very practical. We're talking.
No romance in here, just practicality.
We're talking, you know, the early, you know, 1920s, late 19-teens. So that was her take on it. My grandmother, this was her daughter, wasn't in love. It was an arranged marriage. She did not want to marry him. She actually fancied
someone
else. She fancied somebody else. But they weren't together. They did not have. He was oblivious to it. It was all in her mind. You know, she really cared for him, but she was shy.
But her heart was elsewhere, in other words. Her heart was not with this man she had to marry.
Right up to when she was going to marry him, she told my mom she wasn't going to marry him. She says, I'm going to say no. Because in France, I found out, they don't say I do. They say no or yes. Obviously, usually they say yes most of the time, yeah.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll ask Marianne Alec more about her memoir, The Liberty Club. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wiegman. I'm Nancy Wiegman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. Orville author Marianne Alec's memoir, The Liberty Club, includes family stories during World War I, the Great Depression, and World War II. Well, see, this was another thing that intrigued me about your book, is that you had all this personal information because, for example, when I was asked to write my father's history, I didn't know these kinds of things. And they said they wanted more than just he was born here and he died here and he went to school there. They wanted this kind of information that you had, how these people were feeling at the time.
That is
what is so wonderful about your book. You knew how they felt about this arranged marriage
and
or whether
choices.
These two people loved each other or not.
Yeah.
And then how did that play out?
Oh, not so well. Not so well. She never did fall in love with him. And there was a lot of, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but there were things that took place that shouldn't have. And it resulted, I don't want to say.
Well, remember, going back to the fact that this mother's concerned about her family and she wants her family taken care of. Mm. And therefore, here's this man who can do that.
Right.
And how is he able to provide so well for the family?
Well, he was in the insurance business, and he insured vineyards, and he lived in the heart of where all the vineyards were. Champagne, Ardennes, Burgundy. I mean, the territory was rich in wine. And so he would travel around these different areas, and he would ensure, talk to the vineyard owners, and that's what he did. And so his commission was huge, or so he thought. So,
and there's a photograph of them walking down, his wife, and this little toddler dressed to the nines so elegantly, and the grandmother
with
rolling.
There
they are in furs, even the little toddler, fur around her neck.
All of them.
So they were quite well off.
Oh, they had millions. They literally had millions.
Yeah, I was shocked at the numbers you gave.
Yeah.
Yes. Of how many francs they had.
Yes. They were filthy rich, to say the least. And but things did change. And again, I don't want to give away too much. I don't know how,
Well, you do have it in the book.
It does a twist. There is a twist. What is found out is he did not acquire the money the way that the family thought that he did, the way that we were told all of our lives. We were given a story all of our lives that my grandfather had acquired all this money and that we were told that he lost it. And the way that he lost it isn't the way I found out. Mm-hmm. And I found out.
So it wasn't until you did the research that you found the real story.
Yes.
And did you ever tell your mother?
No. No way.
It would have broken her heart.
I didn't tell her, and I didn't tell my aunt. Because
her sister.
Yes, her sister Colette. Mm-hmm. My mother Monique and cousin Colette. And
this was their parents now that this story was fabricated to make the family feel better so the children wouldn't worry. Yes, your dad's off on a business trip.
Always.
And they were not told any more than that. And you found out the real story.
Yeah, and I only found out just a few years when I was doing my research. I think it was in 2012. I can't remember the dates probably on the document. I actually have the letter I received from Vichy, from the Vichy archives. I had sent them a letter. And actually, I forgot to include this in the book. The gal who helped me with my citizenship, my French citizenship, I told her I was looking for, what I was looking for. Yeah. And she directed me to this Vichy archives. It's all in French. Every bit of it's in French.
As you would expect.
Yes, of course. Yes, it's a French news. Yeah. So I had to do all this. I don't speak French. I mean, it's very, very little. I don't know very much French at all. So I had to do all the online translating to find out what, just from one page to another, it was quite a bit of work.
Because it was pretty lengthy.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Just to get the information to where I would get the right documents. And so once I was able to do that, then I wrote a letter and I put the letter in both French and in English and I sent it to them. And then I was able to get the documents I wanted back. I could not believe it. And then they gave me further information on another address where I could get even more information. So all of a sudden, I had all this information, all in French. All the documents were mailed to me in French. And it wasn't until another 3 years that I was able to get all of those Translated. So I knew what they were.
And found out the true story.
And found out the true story.
My guest is Marianne Alec, and she has written the story of her Greek father and her French mother. And she is telling us about her mother's side, the French side of the family, an arranged marriage, and a little family intrigue because the children were not told what really happened. They were told a story that the family could live with.
Yes.
But then comes the day when their father comes back.
Yes.
And how did that go? Oh, Dad, how great to see you.
Yes. Well, they were all very excited to see him because he had been gone for 4 years. And so everyone was elated. The children were very young at the time, so now they're 4 years older. There was a lot of bitterness with my grandmother and her husband. And Louise, my great-grandmother.
Who was really took care of the children because the father was gone for 4 years. The mother worked.
Yes.
And so they really, it was their grandmother that took care of them.
Totally, yeah. She raised them. Yes. And so when he came home, the kids not knowing why he had been, was gone to begin with, you know, were just excited to have him back, you know. And then things changed, though. He didn't come back the same.
Well, even the photograph that when he's walking down this avenue in Nice, so elegant, and then you see that photograph when he came back, and he's emaciated looking, and he just doesn't look as healthy. And
no, and he's not. For one thing, he was sick. He had an ulcer, which plagued him for the rest of his life. But also, he was a beaten man on all counts because of what had happened that I had found out.
Where he really was those 4 years.
Yes, and why and how he had
family.
And how he had really acquired the millions that the family was blessed with, or actually not. Yes.
In this story, there's a page that I got to, and I thought, oh, I think that explains this odd fact about your background, because I was reading that you had had this concrete company, that you had a contractor's license specializing in concrete construction.
Yes.
I thought, boy, that comes out of the blue.
Yes.
And I'm reading along in your book, I thought, oh, it really didn't come out of the blue. You had somebody in your family sold concrete supplies. Who was that?
My mother.
Your mother. I mean, a woman, you think of men as being in construction.
Well, she worked at the front office. That's the thing. She worked at the front office. She was the sole employee of a concrete construction company. They actually supplied the concrete to the contractor, as I understand it. And so, yeah, she, you know, handled the phones and took the orders and all that. And as you read in her diary, because the way I was able to get all this information, one of the ways was I have my mother's journal that she wrote starting in December of 1943.
What a treasure.
Oh.
What a treasure.
80 pages, handwritten, all in French. And that's how I found out about the concrete supply company and so much more.
This is probably after you had your contractor's license then.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I found the book after, yes. I haven't done the concrete construction for a number of years.
Yeah, but I mean, you did you know this about your mother when you decided you wanted to get a contractor's license?
No, had no idea.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know until I read it in the journal. I had no idea. Actually, I didn't read it in the journal. My aunt, Colette, oh, God, she was a godsend. She sat down, and I had my recorder, and she read all of the pages in two different takes. I just sat down with her, and we'd take breaks. And she would just read, you know, what was happening, which was
translating for your
for
records.
Me. For my book, yes.
What your mother had written in French. Yeah.
And the wonderful thing is she lived it.
She was right there along with the same things that her sister, these were two sisters who were teenagers during the war.
Yes.
What an awful thing.
The war,
it was amazing what they went through during World War II.
It was. And, you know, and they actually had it easy compared to so many others. And my mother even wrote about how selfish she felt that they were when she mentions the Exodus in 39-40. She's talking about all the people that left to flee the Nazis that came to the South, because at that time the South of France was relatively safe because it was under Italian occupation. And the Italians didn't persecute the way the Vichy regime did in the northern part. So, but even so, they did have many, you know, many restrictions, and it was an inconvenience, is how I put it, for my mother. Uh-huh. You know, she felt, because she was a teenager. So for her, it was different than it was for her parents. She saw things differently. And with my niece, my Aunt Colette translating, she was able to add her own stories.
Impressions. What she remembered that time.
Yes. Yeah. And she had some great stories that I had no idea had happened. And so she shared them with me. And, of course, I was able to put those in the book as well.
My guest is Marianne Alec, and she was born in Oroville. She grew up there. Her dad was born in Oroville of Greek ancestry. And she writes a story of her Greek side of the family. We've just been talking about the French side because the book is so rich in detail about the French side of her family that we're just talking about the French side of the family. So there comes a point. There's your mother bored and thinking, I'd love to be married and have children. I'm just a teenager and I'm just so bored and I'd love to fall in love and get married.
So, even during wartime, it was the same as someone in the United States, anywhere in the world. Young teenager girl wanted to be in love.
Yeah, that's what you think, too, when you're reading that.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that she could be right here today.
Yeah.
And these same feelings that teenagers have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she and her sister were going through these things at the same time. Mm-hmm. The difference, though, too, is they had the horrors of seeing, like, a dead body.
Oh, yeah.
When they're just so young. And I can't imagine.
Yeah, no.
The trauma that they had having the war right at their doorstep.
Oh, yeah. It was bombardments and air raids all the time. And, you know, food was rationed, you know, so they had to ration, you know, everything. And then my great-grandmother was pulled aside and detained for having like a pint of goat's milk, because you weren't supposed to have it on that day. And they held her for hours.
Just for that pint of goat's milk.
Just to aggravate her. Who knows why? And then they end up giving it to her and let her go.
And then Colette could have been arrested for the things that she did.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Out of just being a good person to help out.
Yes.
The Jewish population was, of course, really under tremendous stress. Unbelievable. Yeah. But Colette also went on a limb to help them out.
Very much so. She was about 15 at the time.
A 15-year-old.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I know. 15. And she was asked to gather the papers from the people that some friends of theirs.
Who
were Jewish, who had gone underground. And she knew them. She knew their house. And she was told where to look for these papers, so that, because back then the Nazis were raiding, you know, going house to house, just, you know, taking what they wanted and seeing who was Jewish and all that. So they wanted their important documents to be taken so that nobody would know.
And this 15-year-old Colette
did that.
Helped them out.
Yes.
Well, this is the point now. Here's this teenager who meets this handsome Greek soldier.
Yes.
And this is the story that you also tell in alternating chapters in your book about the Greek side of your family. And I want to talk about them, but we're going to have to wait till next week. Meanwhile, I want to tell people that you are having a book signing tomorrow, starting at 10 o'clock. And it'll be at the Upper Crust Bakery, which is new for them. I don't know have they ever done this before?
They never have. Lori Powers and I went to high school together. And I called her. I said, "Hey, Lori." I said, she knew about my book and such. And so she said, "Yeah, sure." She says, "I've never done one before." I said, "I bet no one's ever asked you."
That's right. And you did.
Yeah.
So this is in Chico, the Upper Crust Bakery on 130 Main Street, starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And you will be signing copies of your book, The Liberty Club.
Correct.
And as I said, your book is so rich in stories that we only got to half the family side.
Right.
So what I'd like to do next week is talk to you about the Greek side of your family and also the title of your book.
Yes.
The Liberty Club.
Where it came about. Yes.
After a break, I'll continue my conversation with Marianne Ehlich about her memoir, The Liberty Club. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Orville author Marianne Ehlich. Now, last week you told us about your mother and her growing up in France.
Yes.
And her grandparents, and it was such a fascinating story. And you have all these wonderful photographs throughout your book of your great-grandparents, and they were just such wonderful photographs that I was glad you were able to put them on your cover, and that was your design.
Well, I basically told my editor, who also did the book cover, what I wanted. I went ahead and cropped them and touched them up because some of these are very old photos, and they've had creases in them and such, and I tinted them the way I wanted, and I sent them all to him. I said, this is what I want. And he made it look even better than I had imagined.
Well, you have different members of your family. Your mother features prominently in the photographs, of course. And you have, tell us more about who are in these photographs.
Yeah, well, the Liberty Club.
In the center.
The
book
center.
Is called The Liberty Club.
Yeah, sorry.
And the very center of the cover is a matchbook cover.
Yes, it's the one that was used. Yeah, that they had for that and for the liquor store that you would also read about. And so I wanted to make sure all the pictures were around the Liberty Club. And so I have a picture of just different pictures. One of them up in the upper right-hand corner is the family in France. And that would have been taken about 1929 or so. And it's when they had tons of money. And then my father in his World War II uniform, that was taken in France. In Germany in 1945 after Hitler, surrendered or died, basically. And then I have my Aunt Colette down underneath the Liberty Club matchbook, which is really cool because I got to see her yesterday. She's still with us.
Well, when I picked up your book and I saw the Liberty Club, I've heard of Liberty Ships, but I didn't know what the Liberty Club was. And once I started reading your book, I thought, oh, that's why she named her book The Liberty Club. So tell the listeners why you named this book The Liberty Club.
It was our family's business. It was a bar.
In?
Downtown Oroville.
Downtown Oroville.
On Montgomery Street. Yes, and it was there for 50 years. And my grandfather, Gus Ehlich, is the one who started it. And then, of course, it became my father's, Johnny. And they had it for a full 50 years.
Well, since you mentioned Gus and Johnny, these are the Greek side of your family.
Correct.
So I would like to go back to the patriarch of this side of your family. And you have a wonderful photograph of Nicholas. And his last name, in the beginning, is not Ehlich.
No.
What is his last name that he was born with?
It's our Greek name, Alexou. And it's spelled A-L-E-X-I-O-U.
And why did he change it to Ehlich?
Well, he didn't change it. It was my grandfather, Gus, his son, who changed it when he came through Ellis Island. And as so many immigrants who came through, they wanted to blend in to America, so they would shorten their name, change their name, which cracks me up. They wanted to be American and sound American, but when you heard them, they obviously had an accent.
So they were Greek.
Yes.
Well, now, on the very beginning of your first chapter, page 2 in your book, there is this wonderful photograph of your great-grandparent, Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
And if when you look at that photograph, there's one thing that stands out.
Oh, totally. His mustache, his handlebar mustache, which in looking at the picture, it had to have been 10 inches long, you know, 5 inches from the center.
I mean, and it didn't droop. It was not a drooping mustache.
Oh, no. He had it waxed and, you know, just perfect sticking out. So, yeah.
He's a nice-looking gentleman, and I imagine he must have had a sense of humor to wear a mustache like that.
I would think so.
So, this patriarch of the family, your great-grandfather, had the Greek name.
Mm-hmm.
So why did his son, and when did his son become Gus Alec?
Well,
instead, what was his name he was born with?
Konstantinos Alexou.
Isn't that a great Greek name?
I know. I love it. I do.
But he thought it was kind of a mouthful for Americans, so he became...
I'm sure. Yeah, he just became Gus Alec.
And he even thought at one time about becoming a priest, did he not?
He did, in his homeland. He was actually studying to become a priest. And my father told me that he remembers him having volumes of Greek Orthodox teachings and books. And a lot of the men used to sit around, and I don't even include this in the book because I have so much information, and they used to sit around and talk about the religion and exchange stories and their thoughts and views. And he remembers them doing that.
So Gus, or Konstantinos,
mm-hmm.
comes to America. And at what point did he change his name?
Through Ellis Island.
Ellis Island. That is just a classic way that immigrants entered this country.
Yes. Yes, that's when he did it. So.
Well, now, the photographs of your father, Johnny, my goodness, what a handsome. He looks like a movie star in his photographs.
I have a friend who said that she used to see my parents. She's a little older than me. She would see my parents in Orville when she was younger, and she thought they were movie stars. Yeah, they were knockouts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this young soldier
mm-hmm.
comes into Nice, and I guess I just, in my imagination, he knocks on the door where Monique is and said, ma'am, can I hang some communications wire here? Because that mm-hmm. was his job.
Correct.
He was a paratrooper.
Yes, he was.
But his job was in communications.
Correct. Yes. And it was love at first sight. It truly was. And it was very interesting because he was also drunk. because it was the liberation of Nice. And they call it the Champagne Campaign for a reason. Because, you know, break out the bottles.
The hard part was over.
Yes. It's time to rest and you know, relax and enjoy the French beauty, so to speak. And, yes, that was what was happening. So he shows up. It's still morning. He's drunk. He's, you know, looking to string his lines up. And actually, my mother had been downstairs and saw him. And he was going to string them in the line in the balcony below, but he wasn't able to, and that's in the book. Mm-hmm. So anyway, my mother offered, seeing him, and thought, oh, he's a cutie, you know, to herself.
Plus, she had been so bored, and she was really just looking for love and hoping it would come her way, and there is this handsome Greek soldier.
Exactly. And so they go up to the balcony, and they, you know, do their thing. And his partner, James Batten, is someone that my brother Greg was able to actually talk to years later, and get some stories from him, which are in the book, firsthand accounts. And he said, after my dad came back from stringing the lines and after he had talked to this French gal, you know, my mom.
Who was a teenager at the time.
Who was a teenager, correct. She was 17, I believe, at the time. He said that was it for Johnny. It was like after that, you know, that was who his sights were on.
Well, one thing that I wondered about as I was reading your book, too, now, it makes sense that they would put Johnny in communications. I mean, he spoke Greek, so he had facility with other language.
Mm-hmm.
But your mother spoke French,
mm-hmm.
and your dad English and Greek. How did they communicate with each other?
I think, you know, love is a universal language, I believe.
And so that was no barrier to
No, it was not. Uh-huh. No, I think that my dad was able to pick up enough. And my mother actually picked up on English very quickly, to the point where, I mean, she became...
Strong motivation on both their parts.
definitely, yes. So.
My guest is Marianne Alec, and her book is The Liberty Club. And the book takes its title from a bard that was in Oroville for many, many years. And since your family was in construction, the Greek side of your family, they really built much of Oroville.
Yes, well, Gus, yes.
Gus did, yeah. So their son goes off to France, mm-hmm. falls in love with this young woman, but they can't get married right away.
Well, no, there's a war still going on. It's not over. And so he has to, you know, go on, and he goes up into the Maritime Alps, and he's doing their fighting there. And I have some wonderful pictures of him up in during World War II during that time. And, you know, back then you didn't have the communication, and plus it was war. You just didn't know what was going on. Every day she could think he died. So it was very tough.
In fact, he minimized it in his letters. He didn't want her to worry. So he made her think everything's fine.
Oh,
I'm
yes.
doing just great.
Yes.
And you have so much detail in your book that just were delightful. For example, what was your dad's best haircut when he was in the Army?
Oh, my gosh. When he first came over, before he was in, when he first came to Africa, then before he went into France and Anzio, he also fought in Anzio, he went down the street and somebody had this really great haircut.
And this is North Africa. It's not like Paris where you might find a good hair cutter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, North Africa.
North Africa. And so he asked the guy where he got it from. So he took him down to this place and he walks in and he sees this guy with this comb, this metal comb wrapped in leather and these hot pokers. And he was actually burning and shaping the hair of the soldier that was sitting in his chair. And he says it just smelled so bad, and he had incense burning everywhere. But he said it was the best haircut he had ever gotten.
You know, I'm wondering, as you're saying this, it's not exactly a haircut, it's a hair burn.
It's a hair burn, yes.
And then when they were in Italy, they had time for opera. That was a surprise.
I know. Yes, The Marriage of Figaro. He saw that with his buddies. I had no idea. My brother John knew that because he had shared that with my brother. And, yeah, who knew?
Because we think at wartime everything is...
shut down.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
And then there was also something that was kind of unsettling. I think if I had been in his shoes, and I don't know if I knew this or just never thought about it, but convicts here in the United States, if they wanted early parole, they could exchange that by going into the Army.
That's correct.
So your dad is elbow to elbow with
yes,
convicts.
That's correct. Yes, he was in some circumstances. And they were ruthless. They did things that today would be considered war crimes. But, you know, people didn't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, it did not set well with my father. But at the same time, he feared them just as much.
I would think so.
Yeah, it's like, well, God, if I tell on them, what are they going to do to me?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I say in the book what they did, but, you know, I'm not going to say it here. You have to read the book.
But, well, yeah. The Germans were the enemy, but still,
yes.
Your dad, for example, when he shot a German soldier in the stomach, he took that young
yes.
man to the medics.
Yes. And he caught hell for it because they're...
Yes, yeah, because the enemy and your
yes.
dad's taken care of, but he's a human being.
Exactly. And he saw him eye to eye. You know, they
yeah.
came around the bush and they both raised their rifles and my dad got the shot off first. Well, you know, he's compassionate.
Yeah.
You know, he's like 17, 18 years old. I mean, come on. And he drug him back to camp and they fixed him up. And he lived and he probably was very grateful.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your dad... has this compassion, and he is a soldier in the war.
Mm-hmm.
And we think, he went to opera, and he's seeing this young French woman. Everything sounds fine. But he was in one of the worst battles mm-hmm. of the whole
yes.
Second World War. And you give statistics of how many dead and wounded, and it's just staggering. Staggering.
And especially since it was for such a short time.
You know, in such a short time,
yeah.
how many dead and wounded there were. So what battle are we talking about, by the way? I don't know if I mentioned
the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
The Battle of the Bulge, correct.
Yeah, because they were celebrating, thinking, okay, this war is pretty much locked up.
Yes.
We're pretty much done.
Yes.
And they didn't know the Germans had one more
mm-hmm.
in December of all times
mm-hmm.
of the year.
And it was the worst winter I mean, it even had snowed in Nice.
In Nice. I noticed that.
Yes.
Snow in Nice. That's very rare.
Which I knew because of my mother's journal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I might mention that you told us this last week, but that your mother, you had access to a journal that your mother kept that was invaluable in knowing what happened and how they felt about it, how she felt about it.
Right. Plus my dad's love letters.
Oh, yes. And you said there were over 100 of these letters.
The binder, I'm not kidding, it's like 2.5 to 3 inches thick. I put them all in numerical sequence before I started, you know, going through
chronological.
I'm sorry, chronological, yes, so that I could follow what was happening. And,
Well, people, and this is a very, it's a number two hobby in the United States, people wanting to learn about their families and their ancestry. And how fortunate you were to have this material. So you have all these letters between your mother and your dad. And mostly it was because they were missing each other.
Oh, yes, definitely.
But then there was one letter that your dad wrote. Here's this compassionate man, and just how could he write that to him? Because by that point they were married.
Yes, after they were married. Yeah, there's a twist. There's a twist I won't give away that is in the book, yes, that you will find. But things worked out, obviously, because they stayed together. But, yeah, there was definitely a twist.
Yeah, because he was able to come back to the United States after they were married, but paperwork, and it took a while for her to be able to.
Well, there was a lot going on. Yeah, there was a lot of turmoil.
Well, at one point in one of your mother's letters, I was struck. She says, "It is raining in my heart." And one of my favorite poems in French is by Paul Verlaine. C'est Il pleure dans mon cœur comme il pleure sur la ville. And it's raining in my heart. The verb that she usually uses is crying. Mm-hmm. It's crying in my heart like it's raining on the city. And when I see rain on a kind of a gray day, I think of that poem. And I thought, oh, your mother is quoting this poem by Paul Verlaine. It's in English in your book.
Yes.
But I thought of the words in French that she's saying. Oh,
I wasn't even aware of that.
It's crying in my heart. My heart is crying like it's raining in my heart. And they're just such touching letters between the two of them, because it was unpredictable. They didn't know when they would get done.
Well, she even at that one time had sent a message to the Salvation Army because she hadn't heard from him for about 5 weeks, which, you know, was way too long.
And I thought it was very nice that she got a reply. That kind of surprised me. I'm thinking, boy, they're probably getting a lot of letters of women who are wondering about their sons or their fathers or their brothers or husbands in this case. And they actually had a nice letter back. Mm-hmm. And what did it say?
It said it was written in both in French and in English. Mm-hmm. And it said that he was not listed as a casualty. That's how they put it. And then 3 days later, she did get a letter from him. But during that time, she was just, you know, frantic, like, oh, is he alive? And then she knew that the Battle of the Bulge had taken place. She knew that there was the big, as she puts it, the big battle in the Ardennes, and which is where it took place. They didn't name it yet, you know, in the Battle of the Bulge at that time. And so she was just, you know, did he die? I mean, so many died.
My guest is Marianne Alec, and her book, her family memoir, is The Liberty Club. And her parents then, once they were married, and got back to the United States, and your family had this bar called The Liberty Club in Oroville. And that was, your dad was... tell us what your dad's role was in the Liberty Club.
You know, he was kind of a caretaker in a way, because these patrons became his downtown family. He really did care about them. He was very compassionate, and my grandfather Gus as well. And one of the things that he did, which was I learned from my brother John, because he's 10 years older than me, so he knows a lot more, thankfully. My dad, a lot of these men were pretty hard drinkers. It was a bar, you know, it was a working man's bar. And so in order for them to still maintain a roof over their heads, my dad would cash their checks. And they became the bank for a lot of these people who didn't have checking accounts. They wouldn't cash their checks at a regular bank. They cashed it there at my dad's bar. And so he would hold back a portion and give allowances to about six of these patrons so that they wouldn't drink it all in, you know, 2 days, and they would still have a roof over their head and still have meals. And he basically did this year after year for many of these men who would have ended up on the streets. And then a lot of them also lived upstairs in the Oro Vista Hotel that my grandparents had.
So. And how many years are we talking about now, this the Liberty Club?
30s to the 80s. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the 1930s to the 1980s.
38 to 87, I think it was. 37 to 87. Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a long life for any business.
Oh, yeah.
And particularly something like that, a bar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you have photographs in your book of when then the Liberty Club was dismantled.
Yes. Yeah. It's very sad for our family. Yeah.
I can imagine. Because your dad, he made the front page of the paper on more than one occasion.
Oh, yes.
One, the anniversary of, because of his role in World War II, mm-hmm. an anniversary comes up and they put his picture on the front page because he was really a war hero.
Oh,
your dad
really was
a war hero.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was actually in twice, once for Anzio and once for the Battle of the Bulge.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So he had the front page for the Battle of the Bulge when the 50th anniversary came up.
Yes.
And then another time when he made the paper was maybe not so
happy. he got knocked out by one of the patrons there. He wasn't a regular. He came in the bar drunk. You know, my dad told him to leave. He wouldn't, and he ended up hitting my dad before my dad even knew it, and they had to take him away, you know, on the gurney, and the guy was handcuffed and taken away.
Yeah, in fact, you have a photograph of your dad being rolled on a gurney.
Yes, yeah. I did a lot of research.
You did, and you had so much material there that you had the journal that your mother wrote. You had the letters between your parents. Mm-hmm. You had recordings that older family members made for you.
John did, yes.
Yeah, your older brother did that, who was named the same name as your dad.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you had access to, and then you got papers and documents that you reproduce in your book, too, that you had access to. So I'm just amazed that you were able to accomplish all that in just 3 years.
It was a lot. Well, I was, you know, I just didn't stop. I was obsessed. I mean, I really was. I was obsessed. And I just like, it was fun. It really was. It was like, oh, my God. You know, you'd find these things like, oh, check this out, you know, and I'd share it with my family and emails and stuff.
Because you found out things that your family didn't know. Not only did you not know, but other members of your family didn't know.
Correct. Nobody knew. Except for, you know, the people that lived it during the time.
I hope people will have a chance to pick up your book because it's not just about your family. It's about all of us who have families, which is all of us.
Most of us come from immigrants, you know, and all stories are about family.
Thank you, Marianne Ellett.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.